Hi, I'm VOA's Alexis Strobe with your worldwide news update. President Donald Trump discussed the war in Ukraine on Wednesday in phone calls with Russian President Vladimir Putin and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Reuters correspondent Olivia Zelino reports.
In a post on his social media platform after speaking to Putin, Trump said the two leaders had agreed that negotiations should start immediately. Russia occupies around a fifth of Ukraine and has demanded Kyiv cede more territory and be rendered permanently neutral under any peace deal. Ukraine demands Russia withdraw from captured territory and says it must receive NATO membership or equivalent security guarantees. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth on Wednesday said NATO membership was unrealistic, as was recovering the territory Ukraine had lost.
Chasing this illusionary goal will only prolong the war and cause more suffering.
Speaking from Kyiv Wednesday, U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent said a minerals deal between Kyiv and Washington would provide Ukraine with a so-called post-war security shield.
And we believe that this is an important signal to the world, to the Russian leadership, that we stand together.
Trump has said he wants $500 billion in rare earth minerals from Ukraine. Zelensky said Kyiv would study the draft agreement presented by the U.S.
That was Reuters correspondent Olivia Zelino. Israel's defense minister says all hell will break loose if Hamas does not release three hostages as planned this weekend. The threat on Wednesday comes as mediators work to keep the fragile ceasefire from collapsing. The militant group has accused Israel of failing to meet its commitments under the deal and threatened to delay the next release of hostages. A Hamas official now says there are positive signals for the release. The dispute has been a major test for the fragile ceasefire, along with President Donald Trump's proposal to relocate Palestinians out of devastated Gaza. This is VOA News. Tulsi Gabbard, a former U.S. representative with little intelligence experience, was sworn on Wednesday as the top U.S. spy. Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner reports.
Gabbard now will oversee the 18-agency intelligence community, including the CIA, and act as President Donald Trump's top advisor on intelligence issues. With little experience in this area, she was considered to be one of Trump's most controversial picks. Yet every Republican besides Senator Mitch McConnell, the party's former leader in the chamber, lined up behind the nominee. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt was asked about this at her briefing Wednesday.
We're greatly disappointed in any Republican who chooses willfully to vote against the president's exceptionally qualified cabinet nominees and picks to lead his America First administration.
By comparison, no Democrats or independents voted in favor of Gabbard. Gabbard, a 43-year-old former Democrat, had faced bipartisan questions about past statements seen as supporting U.S. adversaries and lack of experience that would have prepared her to manage a $100 billion budget.
That was Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner. Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban is hosting Alice Weidel, the alternative for Germany Party's candidate for chancellor, a rare meeting between a European leader and Germany's far-right party. Speaking at a news conference following their meeting Wednesday, Orban praised AfD, calling it the future, and endorsing its stance on immigration and the economy. The meeting signaled a shift in Orban's approach to AfD, which he previously kept at a distance. The ACLU sues for access to migrants flown to Guantanamo in February. AP correspondent Haya Panjwani reports.
Civil rights attorneys have sued the Trump administration to gain access to detained migrants who they say have been flown to Guantanamo Bay and held there without being able to consult lawyers or speak to relatives. American Civil Liberties Union lawyers filed the federal lawsuit in Washington, D.C. They say this is the first time in U.S. history that the government has detained non-citizens on civil immigration charges at the U.S. naval base in Cuba. For decades, the base primarily was used to detain foreigners associated with the September 11, 2001 attacks. Haya Panjwani, Washington.
Congo's largest church organizations have met with Rwanda-backed rebels in the country's east to advocate for peace and dialogue after weeks-long fighting. The meeting Wednesday comes weeks after the M23 rebels moved into Goma, the region's largest city, and captured it before advancing deeper into the neighboring South Kivu province. One of the church leaders, Bishop Donatien Nashol, said the meeting was an opportunity to seek an end to the war as soon as possible because we remain convinced the solution to this crisis is not military. The M23 rebels are the most prominent of more than 100 armed groups vying for control of Congo's mineral-rich east. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website. I'm Alexis Strobe, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, February 13, and here are some of the stories we are covering. A delegation of church leaders in the DRC has met with M23 rebels in Goma.
We want the implication of everyone to sit down together, to build peace together without fighting, without killing people.
Malawi University students are being forced to withdraw amid U.S. foreign aid freeze. Lawyers say a hunger strike is harming the health of detained Ugandan opposition leader Dr. Kizza Besigye. Zimbabwe plans to pay foreign investors affected by land reforms. Liberian President Boakai suspends 457 officials without pay for not declaring their assets.
The president's action today is fulfillment of his fight towards corruption. We appreciate his support because this is something that's been long coming.
And the media industry celebrates World Radio Day today, Thursday. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A delegation of church leaders has met with M23 rebels in Goma in search of dialogue to end the conflict in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. The group also met February 11 with DRC President Felix Tshisekedi. Monsignor Donatien Nshole is the General Secretary of the National Episcopal Conference of Congo. He tells me that finding an amicable end to the conflict requires talking to all parties.
The Catholic Church and the Protestant Church, led by their president, we came to share with M23 about our project to make a social path for the peace and together with our neighbors. So we came to explain that luxury crisis can find a solution with the war. So we want the implication of everyone to sit down together, to build peace together without fighting, without killing people.
Bishop, the M23, how did they receive your message?
They received us very, very good. They explained us the reason of their fighting, but I'm not their speaker to tell that. The most important is that they are open of this initiative. So they promised to send us their condition to participate in this initiative.
Do you plan also to meet with the DRC government?
Before we begin with the meeting our President Felix Tshisekedi, he explained to him this project. He appreciated it. And we have also to meet the other presidents in the region, the president of Kenya, the president of Rwanda, the president of Angola, the president of Congo, the president of Burundi. In our planning, we want to meet them because the solution of in this crisis is inside the country and outside the country. So we appreciate the initiative around Nairobi and Rwanda, but as Congolese, we have to systematically have a lot of things between us.
What do you say, Bishop, to some people who said, if you want peace, you have to make sure it's bring in Rwanda and the DRC government instead of talking just with the M23 because they believe that M23 is backed by Rwanda?
Let's I tell you, there is a revendication that don't concern Rwanda. There are revendications that concern Rwanda. So we have the double level, national level and the regional level. So we want to join two levels to find solution.
You said you met with President Tshisekedi. Is that right? How did President Tshisekedi receive your message? Did he welcome your initiative?
Yes, he said that it is welcome. It's a good thing. Recommended us to meet also the other president who are working for the same goal.
Monsignor Donatien Unchalet is the General Secretary of the National Episcopal Conference of the Congo. He was speaking with me from Goma, the DRC. Liberian President Joseph Boakai has suspended 457 government officials without pay for not declaring their assets, according to the Liberia Front Page Africa publication. The list includes Al Hassan Conte, Liberia's ambassador to the United States. Alexandra Kwame-Zoe is the chairperson of the Liberia Anti-Corruption Commission, the LACC. She tells me that the suspensions are in line with President Boakai's commitment to fight corruption and restore trust in government institutions.
Today, as we speak, we have a listing of over 400 persons who have not declared. So what we did in December, we compiled a listing, and then we submitted it to the president with the recommendation, which included sanctions, withholding of salary, suspension until compliance, as well as, in worst case, dismissal. The president's action today is fulfillment of his fight towards corruption. We appreciate his support, because this is something that's been long coming. And so, yes, as if you've been following, I've been seeing that even the CSA is taking steps to implement the suspension with up pay. But today, as we speak, we have people coming in to declare to, but the listing is not going to be amended. It's not going to change.
Who are some of the high-ranking officials? I understand one of the officials is Al Hassan Conte, the Liberia's ambassador to the United States.
There are a couple of issues that were raised. So Al Hassan Conte received his appointment letter in January of this year, and his concern was that he hasn't reached the 30 days. What I would just encourage is that you don't even have to reach the 30 days. Once you are appointed, proceed to the LACC to declare your assets. So to clarify, Dr. Al Hassan Conte today show his letter, and eventually we'll take the necessary steps to adjust after consultation.
So what happened to those suspended? Will they still get their pay?
The president's memo was clear. It said suspension without pay. So as I said, the civil society agency, CSA, is enforcing that mandate.
The President Boakai declared his assets, because I don't recall hearing about it.
President Boakai declared his assets early last year. I think it was January of last year, or February. I seem to be correct. I need to take a look at the list. But yes, indeed, the president declared his assets. The vice president declared his assets, and to the extent published it.
So who is going to enforce this mandate in terms of withholding the payment, the salaries of these officials who haven't declared their assets?
The civil service agency that is responsible for government employees has instructed all heads of agencies and ministries to fully implement the defense mandate by withholding salaries for the month of February.
What's next for your commission?
I mean, we have a mandate to investigate, prosecute acts of corruption, as well as educate the public about the ills of corruption and the benefits that come with eradicating it. This is what we are going to continue to do. In the next few days, again, we'll be coming up with announcement or pronouncement regarding cases we have concluded for investigation in 2024, and then we'll be letting the general public know our next steps, which is indictment. We're going to be working closely with the court to get some indictments up to proceed to prosecution, and we're going to continue our education and awareness programs. This year, we're going to rural areas based on the decentralization policy or our decentralization effort. We're going to move into the rural areas and do a little more education and awareness on that end.
Alexandra Kwame-Zoe is the chairman of the Liberia Anti-Corruption Commission. She was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. Public universities in Malawi have ordered all students sponsored by USAID to drop out or seek other sources of funding if they want to remain in school. This follows the 90-day freeze on U.S. foreign assistance recently announced by President Donald Trump. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
The U.S. government, through its development arm, USAID, has long provided financial support to thousands of students in Malawi's public universities. Now the aid freeze is affecting several universities, including the Lilongwe University of Agriculture and Natural Resources. Nzuzu University, Tamuz University of Health Sciences, and the Malawi University of Science and Technology, or MAST. James Mpande is the communications manager at MAST. He says the U.S. foreign aid freeze is a big blow to several USAID-funded projects the school was implementing.
And what it means now is that everything has been suspended. So if we are developing a curriculum, we can't proceed. If we had some outreach activities, we can't proceed. If we are in the process of making some procurements, we can't proceed.
He says some sponsored students may face the impact next semester.
Fortunately, we are in the mid of a semester, so probably fees or support for this semester was already sorted out. But for the upcoming semesters and years, it means the students will have to look elsewhere for support or they risk withdrawing.
However, Patience Yamikani Chakwana, a beneficiary of USAID at MAST, told VOA that she's already feeling the impact. Chakwana, a first-year student in business information technology, says the foreign aid suspension was imposed before students received money for their daily upkeep.
It was really unexpected. We just like started school, like after a week, and then we were getting the news. At the time, we didn't have money, like the pocket money we weren't given. Imagine, I heard the news, also I had classes. I actually didn't know what to do. That was like the only hope I had.
Chakwana says besides paying for her tuition and accommodation, USAID was giving her money for groceries and the internet connection for her mobile phone. She says she now survives on money she borrows from friends. Jessica Bwira is Malawi's Minister of Higher Education. She says the aid suspension is discouraging, but says the Malawi government is finding other sources to help students.
We've engaged local partnerships, that is the private sector, to see how they can help us. We've also engaged our international partners. For example, we've got a standing agreement with the Republic of Morocco. We've also engaged the Czech Republic, and we'll be engaging others too.
Alexander Kude is the Deputy Director for the Commonwealth Students Association. He told VOA that the U.S. foreign aid suspension should be a wake-up call for developing countries to start investing more in education and reduce over-dependence in foreign aid.
Look, the budget that United States of America use or funds us on this USAID is just a percentage of their money and budget. If you look at how much that is and where do they get it from, why not standing alone and doing it ourselves?
The Trump administration says it imposed the 90-day freeze to review USAID spending and make sure that it aligns with U.S. policy and interests. The freeze will extend through April 20th. Lamek Masina, VOA News, Blanta, Malawi.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, February 13. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. In Uganda, lawyers for Dr. Kizza Besigye visited him on Wednesday and say his health is deteriorating from his hunger strike. This after the government refused to release him despite a Supreme Court ruling that nullified the trial of civilians in military courts. His lawyers fear Besigye could die if not given proper medication. Reporter Mugumi Davis Rakaringi has more from Kampala.
Elias Lukwago, the lawyer of opposition leader Kizza Besigye, says the retired colonel and former physician of the president had to walk with support when the two met at Rosera prison on Wednesday.
He's been experiencing episodes of some drastic spike in the pressure levels which are not explained, and the unfortunate bit has not been given the opportunity of seeing his personal physician. It's only the in-house doctors who have been coming around to monitor the situation. But unfortunately, again, they also ill-equipped.
Besigye was kidnapped from Kenya last year and presented to military court in Uganda. He was charged, among others, plotting to destabilize Uganda's security. Last month, the Supreme Court delivered a judgment nullifying with immediate effect the prosecution of all civilians in military courts, which it said was unconstitutional.
There are no pending charges against him, no ongoing proceedings before any court, no order of remand. He's not a convict, so his status here is unique.
Kampala lawyer and activist Sarah Birete agrees. She terms the continued detention of Besigye as illegal.
The prison authorities are in contempt of the Supreme Court decision, are in violation of the right to liberty of Dr. Besigye and Haj Obed Rutare. They are also, you know, failing in their duties by holding people with no documentation.
After the Supreme Court ruling, Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni posted on his social media ex former Twitter criticizing the ruling, saying the country is not governed by judges, but by the people. Museveni defended the military courts, saying its trials reinforce the civilian judicial system to defend the lives of people against armed criminals. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinje, Kampala, Uganda.
Zimbabwe's government says it will compensate foreign investors who lost access in the country's controversial land reforms in the early 2000s, but were protected by bilateral investment protection agreements. As Columbus Mavunga reports, some white Zimbabwe farmers who were also promised compensation for confiscated land are still waiting for their payment.
In a statement Wednesday, Zimbabwe's Finance Minister Muthuli Ncube said the government will pay 94 former farmers from countries such as Switzerland, Denmark, Germany, Netherlands, and the former Yugoslavia. All of these farmers are covered under bilateral investment protection and promotion agreements, or BIPAs, that Zimbabwe signed with the farmers' countries. Ncube said $20 million is being paid out of the 2024 budget, and another $20 million would come from the 2025 budget.
This is a very important issue for our arrears, clearance, and debt resolution process for Zimbabwe, because some of the countries for which we want support, their farmers, their investors into Zimbabwe were affected by the land reform program in the early 2000s. But we're only targeting those countries where the BIPAs were ratified properly. Our aim is that by the end of 2028, we'll have cleared the entire liability for the paper farmers of $146 million. We believe that this is very important for building trust, for honoring our commitments.
However, Edima Hembe, an independent economist based in Harare, says resettled farmers, not the government, should pay the $146 million to prevent increasing the country's debt.
Why is the government paying for the farms which were allocated to individuals? They are farming. Some are doing tobacco, and they've been selling their tobacco over the years. And we are seeing that there is now a move towards giving them title deeds. Why is the government assuming that debt?
It is not just taxpayers concerned by Harare paying only former farmers of foreign origin. Displaced white Zimbabwean farmers want to be compensated as well as per 2020 agreement. That agreement called for Harare to pay $3.5 billion to the farmers driven off their land under a program begged by then-President Robert Mugabe starting in 2000. Trevor Gifford is the former head of Zimbabwe's Commercial Farmers Union.
25 years from the start of land reform in Zimbabwe, the majority of displaced title deed holders remain destitute due to the non-payment of compensation. Government failed to honor its commitment on paying timelessly under the Global Compensation Agreement, which has now expired.
He says the government's move to give title deeds to the farmers who took over the land will only create confusion and keep away foreign investors. For now, Zimbabwe government says it will issue titles to the resettled farmers so they can use them to borrow money for capitalization of their businesses. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
The international community is celebrating World Radio Day today, Thursday, with the theme Radio and Climate Change. Journalists say the medium has evolved over time and that the majority are embracing the digital world to educate the audience on current affairs. Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi.
Today being World Radio Day, many journalists are using the platform to educate people on matters affecting the globe. As the world faces the growing challenges of climate change, radio remains a vital medium for spreading awareness, educating audiences, and encouraging collective action. Hassan Ali is a seasonal journalist in Kenya, working for Radio 47. She hosts a Swahili show on Saturdays to educate and enlighten listeners in Swahili about the language and other issues.
Now you realize that this program not only educates, entertains, but it also focuses on current affairs. So I felt I'm a journalist. I've trained as a journalist. I'm also a teacher. You know, I've trained as a teacher. But I don't practice teaching. I practice journalism. So I asked myself, how do I counter that void that is left for me being a journalist and not a teacher? That's why I decided to come up with educative programs that are very, very popular.
Radio helps with the dissemination of fact-based information, listeners' voices, and dedicated radio shows. Ali says today's broadcasters have embraced social media platforms to capture the majority of the audience, which he says are embracing digital media. He says the audience that mostly tune to radio via frequency FMs have declined, and many are embracing social media platforms.
But the way radio is right now is not the way radio was 10 or 15 or 20 years ago. I'm talking about the infrastructure. But the them days, presenters, or even disco jockeys used to work with record players or reel-to-reel tapes. Nowadays, things have changed. We did embrace technology. I'm talking about the computer world. The masses have moved on to the socials, the digitals. That's why a good number of my programs are not just recorded for audio, but I do record or present my live shows, having in mind that this is an era of social platforms.
The UN encourages radio stations to strengthen their editorial, financial, and networking potential through collaboration and content exchange. Masitaira Morengo is a journalist with Milele FM, a radio station in Kenya. She hosts a mid-morning show that educates the audience on matters health. She says the largest audience for most of her shows in rural areas.
I started doing much more research on mental health and all that. And most of the stories that I do is matters mental health. However, I'm always open to broader health because I realized mental health, yes, it's broad, but people actually would also want to know much about other things that actually are happening in our society today. So what I would say as we celebrate World Radio Day, let us give health an upper hand when reporting.
According to UNESCO, radio is one of the most dependable and widely utilized form of media in the world. The medium helps it reach its international objectives by supporting populations through climate disasters such as tropical storms and floods. For VOA Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi.
That's it for this Thursday, February 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming aboard with us this morning. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Botti, Washington, saying, have a great day, but please be safe, whatever you do.
VOA Africa has a wide variety of programs for you. News, lifestyle, health, politics, youth, women, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, television, and the internet on voaafrica.com.